Helen realised that she had walked too far just as daylight was beginning to fade. As she looked around her, she was struck by the desolation of the country. During her long walk, she had met no one and had passed no cottage. The high-banked lanes, which blocked her view, were little better than steep mudslides. On either side of her rose the hills, barren sepia mounds blurred by a fine spit of rain. Over all hung a heavy sense of expectancy, as though the valley awaited some disaster. In the distance, too far away to be even a threat, rumbled faint, lumpy sounds of thunder. Fortunately, Helen was a realist, used to facing hard economic facts and not prone to self-pity. Of soaring spirit, yet possessed of sound common sense, she believed that those thinly veiled pitfalls over hell, heaviness of body and darkness of spirit, could be explained away by liver or atmosphere. Small and pale as a slip of crescent moon, she was only redeemed from insignificance by her bush of lightly red springy hair. But in spite of her unostentatious appearance, she throbbed with a passion for life, expressed in an expectancy of the future, which made her welcome each fresh day and shred its interest from every hour and minute. As a child, she pestered strangers to tell her the time, not from a mere dull wish to know whether it was early or late, but from a specialised curiosity to see their watches. This habit persisted when she had to earn her own living under the roofs of fortunate people who possessed houses of their own. Her one dread was being out of work. She could estimate, therefore, the scores of replies which had probably been received as a result of the advertisement for a lady help at Professor Warren's country house. And as soon as she arrived at the summit, she realised that its very loneliness had helped to remove her from the ranks of the unemployed. It was tucked away in a corner, somewhere at a union of three counties on the borderline between England and Wales. The nearest town was 22 miles away, the nearest village 12. No maid would stay at such a forsaken pocket, a pocket with a hole in it, through which dribbled a chronic shrinkage of domestic labour. Mrs. Oates, who, with her husband, helped to fill the breach, summed up the situation to Helen when they met, by appointment, at the ladies' waiting room at Hereford. "I told Miss Warren she'd have to get a lady. No one else would put up with it." Helen agreed that ladies were a drug in the market. She had enjoyed some months of enforced leisure and was only too grateful for the security of any home after weeks of stringent economy, since starvation is a word not found in a lady's vocabulary. Apart from the essential loneliness of the locality, it was an excellent post, for she had not only a nice room and good food, but she took her meals with the family. The last fact counted, with her, for more than a gesture of consideration, since it gave her the chance to study her employers. She was lucky in being able to project herself into their lives, for she could rarely afford a seat at the pictures and had to extract her entertainment from the raw material of life. The Warren family possessed some of the elements of drama. The professor, who was a widow, and his sister and housekeeper, Miss Warren, were middle-aged to elderly. Helen classified them as definite types, academic, frigid and well-bred, but otherwise devoid of the vital human interest. Their stepmother, however, old Lady Warren, the invalid in the blue room, was of a richer mould. Blood and mud had been used in her mixture, and the whole was churned up thrice daily by a dose of evil temper. She was a terror of the household. Only yesterday she had flung a basin of gruel at her nurse's head. It had been her natural and ladylike protest against this substitute for the rare steak which she preferred but was unable to chew. As her aim was excellent, it had achieved the desired result. That morning, Oates had driven the departing nurse into the town and was coming back in the evening with a fresh target. Helen, who had not yet been brought into contact with the old lady, rather admired her spirit. The household was waiting for her to die, but she still called the tune. Every morning, death knocked politely on the door of the blue room, and Lady Warren saluted him in her customary fashion with a thumb to her nose. Besides this low comedy relief, Helen suspected the triangle situation, as represented by the professor's son, his daughter-in-law, and the resident pupil, whom the professor was coaching for the Indian Civil Service. The son, a clever, ugly youth, was violently and aggressively in love with his wife, Simone. She was an unusually attractive girl, with money of her own and a wanton streak in her composition. To put it mildly, she was an experimentalist with men. At present, she was plainly trying to make sentimental history with the pupil, Stephen Rice, a good-looking, casual young sprig, rejected of Oxford. Helen liked him instinctively and hoped he would continue to resist the lady. Although her curiosity hovered around the summit and its inmates, her duties were her chief interest. The reminder that she had a new job to hold down made her pull a face as she glanced at her watch. Already the first shadows were beginning to stir, as a prelude to the short interlude between the lights. Very soon it would be dark. A long walk stretched between her and the summit. She could see it, in the distance, blocked with solid assurance against the background of shrouded hills, but dividing them yawned a bowl of empty country, which dipped down for about a mile into a tree-lined hollow, before it climbed up a corresponding slope to the young plantation on its crest. In spite of her stoicism, Helen's heart sank faintly at the prospect of repassing through that choked dell. Since she had come to the summit, she had been struck by the density of the surrounding undergrowth. When she looked out of the windows at twilight, the evergreen shrubs on the lawn seemed actually to move and advance closer to the walls, as though they were pioneers in a creeping invasion. Feeling secure, as in a fortress, she enjoyed the contrast between the witched garden and the solid house, cheerful with lights and voices. She was inside and safe. But now she was outside, and nearly 2 miles away. "Idiot," she told herself. "It's not late. It's only dark. Scram!"